States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the first episode of 2018 with me, Chris Stafford. On this week's show, we're going to be hearing from Laura Graves, who's going to tell us what it means for Vedadis to have been named the 2017 Adequan USDF Grand Prix Horse of the Year. And then we'll hear from Sandy Veneman. She's going to be here to tell us about training from the horse's point of view. But first of all, we have some news for you. And before we get to that, we would, of course, like to remind you, as always, that the views of the host and the guests of this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the USDF or its members. The Deloitte US Para Equestrian Dressage Team, comprised of Michaela Bandenu from Santa Barbara, California, Katie Jackson from Austin, Texas, Margaret McIntosh from Reading, Pennsylvania, and Roxanne Trunnell from Rowlett, Texas, stepped into 2018 with an impressive performance at the Adequan Global Dressage Festival CPEDI 3-star event with a total team score of 420.622. Their chef d'équipe and national advisor, Kai Hunt, led the team in their opening competition of the year, and Hunt commented that we're looking forward to an exciting show season for 2018. And to be a solid contender by the end of the qualifying period for the FEI World Equestrian Games in Tryon, North Carolina. Our para dressage sport is growing rapidly, with a large group of under 25 riders, juniors and young riders attracted to the sport. And we're supporting a strong base of experienced and upcoming competitors. So 2018 is going to be a good year. And the USDF has announced that 23 USDF members successfully graduated from the USDF L Education Program in 2017. This program is designed to prepare candidates to enter the USEF's Small R Judges Training Program to qualify individuals to judge schooling shows and to give competitors, trainers, and instructors greater insight into the evaluation process of judging dressage. The USDF L Education Program is an excellent opportunity for all members to learn how to improve their scores and improve their ability to view other riders from a judge's perspective, whether or not they plan on becoming licensed judges themselves. Laura Graves' Vedadis was named the 2017 Adequan USDF Grand Prix Horse of the Year. His medium score was 79.94%. making him the top horse in the U.S. competing at this level and the recipient of the USDF's highest honor. And Laura joins us now to reflect on his career and why winning this award is so special to her.
Welcome back to the program.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
And a happy new year.
Happy new year to you.
How's it going down there in Florida? Surviving the winter cold, which is all relative, isn't it?
It is all relative, but we have a legitimate reason to say that we're cold right now. This morning we woke up, it was 30 degrees, and it's nothing like I just returned home from Vermont where it was sub-zero temperatures. So I'm just excited we're in the positive digits, I guess.
So we're just coming out of the holiday season, of course. Did that little pony of yours, Vedadis, who is the star of the show, we're going to talk all about him, it's all about him. Did he have a bit of a holiday break too?
Yeah, everybody had, all of my horses had a bit of a holiday break. They had, everyone had a good week off. They just, my girls who stay here in Florida while I went home, they'll pop them on the lunge line just in a halter and let them stretch their legs and run around if they feel like it. But yeah, pretty much a holiday. And, I sat on Diddy for the first time yesterday, and we had this extreme weather. I think northern parts of Florida were even getting snow showers, and it was windy, and we had kind of freezing rain type of weather here, and he was just a maniac. So I think today I'll ride him this morning, and then I'll probably get on and ride him again this afternoon.
Well, he clearly is feeling this himself. For a teenager, he's what, coming 16 now, and you've had him how long, Laura?
Yeah, he'll be 16 this April. He was an April foal, and he certainly doesn't feel his age. I've had him, okay, I guess 15 years.
And that's a tremendous relationship, of course, you have with him. It's so successful. I mean, your successes have just come one after the other once you got onto the team. And it's a wonderful career already so far, and there's still much more to go. But getting named as the 2017 Adequan USDF Grand Prix Horse of the Year must mean something special to you, because it really does celebrate the horse and all his achievements and give him the recognition that I'm sure you feel every day that he deserves.
Yeah, you know, it's a funny thing. And at this point, I do sometimes just hold my breath, because I keep thinking how much better can this ride really get, you know? And people maybe don't understand how special this award was to me, because we've had so many other great accomplishments. But as top notch as this horse has been his whole career, he's never been Horse of the Year. And so that was really special. And to be recognized in this country by our own federation and our own groups. And I was actually able to attend the awards ceremony in Lexington. It was, a lot of people in tears, which was a special thing. And it's always been my ambition with this horse to have the people, and especially in this country, appreciate him the way that I do. And to see a little bit of that happening is a really heartwarming thing for me.
Yeah, it certainly must be, especially, you know, when you're getting to this point in his career. And, well, of course, we're going to talk about it being a World Equestrian Games year in a minute, but we also should mention that he was the recipient of the Colonel Thackeray Award, too, and that trophy will be on permanent display in the Rimmer Foundation USDF Hall of Fame. That, again, is another recognition. He is going to be permanently displayed, you know, for all to see, for the dressage world to enjoy. What does that mean to you, that he would have that public recognition forever, really?
Yeah, again, it just makes me so proud. And to put him alongside some of these other horses where he will be, he gets a permanent plaque in these places. And I do, I might be a little biased, but he has, I do think, really a bit revived the sport of dressage in this country. And gotten people really excited about it, and, you know, brought some new fire to the dream that people can make this happen, and it's a dream that anyone can have. And so that makes me very proud, and to have his successes have earned him these plaques and these trophies and these awards, hopefully people will be able to tell this story for a very long time.
And, of course, very special for you to be able to tell your team and share all of that with your team. When you told them, what was their reaction?
I mean, I think everyone gets so excited about everything this horse does, because you look back on, you know, my team, we've been together a really long time, my family and the girls who work for me and, you know, my coach and my sponsors. And when you look back on everything, there are so many times where this almost didn't happen. You know, there were certain choices and certain things that happened, setbacks along the way and things where all of this, a very small change of story, and nobody would even know who this horse was. So I think it really makes us appreciate the journey that we've been on over the past 15 years.
I want to just take a look back down memory lane then, Laura, and the milestones that you mentioned. There were some really significant turning points in his life, in his career. When you look back at those now, what would have been those highlights, the highs and the lows, really?
I think one of the first highlights was, of course, making the choice to move down here to Florida. It was not so easy. I didn't know anybody. I had no idea what this would look like, being a working student down here. And it was a rough 3 years during that time. Of course, I learned a lot. And I really learned a lot about the trainer and the person that I wanted to be and how I wanted to bring this horse along. And one of the toughest times it was during the time I was a working student, where he, some people know, he actually got stuck in his stall in the bars with his teeth, and he broke his jaw in several places. And that was a point where we didn't know if he would ever be able to wear a bridle again. So certainly he was much younger, and he hadn't achieved all of these things. But that was kind of a point where you say, well, I might just have a pet at this point. And that for sure was a big milestone. And then, of course, this horse loves his job. And so within just, you know, 6 months or so, after taking all of the hardware out, he was back in business. And we ended up doing this small tour at the Festival of Champions in 2012. So he's just a remarkable spirit. And I think his whole story kind of is all in line with that. But, you know, after I left my working student position, we were again without a coach, and you kind of find yourself lost and just waiting to kind of be picked up by another agent who kind of funnels you into the mainstream again. And we busted our butts, and I thank God every day for Debbie McDonald and taking that chance on us and putting her time into us. Of course, we were persistent, but, you know, she didn't have to take us on. And without her, again, you know, all these little things, nobody would know our story.
And it is a remarkable story now, of course, once you got onto the team and the world got to know what you could do as a partnership. And when you reflect on it, in terms of his training, did he, when you went moved up the levels and then you got to Grand Prix, Laura, were there any sort of wow moments when you thought, gosh, this is just getting so much better, that the potential you thought you did have originally, even those levels of potential were increasing right in front of you? I mean, and were there any really surprises in terms of how his training was developing and what you might achieve with him?
I mean, I don't think that ever since we got on the right path training-wise, and from the time we moved down here in Florida, I don't think I ever doubted him or his potential. I would look around, and I was naive, and I never said these things out loud, but I would look around, and I thought to myself, this horse is better than all of these other horses. Of course, we had a super sloppy test. I mean, there were a lot of things that kept us from being in that top tier, but anyone who's, and there are very few people, but who sit on this horse, he just puts the biggest smile on your face. It's the most amazing, powerful, but soft and supple feeling. It's just this insane happiness. And the few people who have ridden him, I mean, he does. He just puts the biggest smile on your face. And I think riding that feeling every day, it put me in this very naive bubble that I always thought he was one of the best horses in the world. I do think he continues to surprise us in, well, how much better can he be? But with tremendous potential, it does come some really sensitive features of his personality. And so I think over time, this is kind of what we're honing in on, is our ability to relax him in certain atmospheres and really control the quality in our transitions. And yeah, just when we think he can't get any better, we try a little something new. And if he's ready for it, then we kind of just say, okay, everybody, you know, hold your breath for a minute, because it's really outstanding, freakishly ways that he moves his body and his legs. And so it's exciting for the whole team.
It continues to be as well, of course. As I said, we're coming into a World Equestrian Games year, and I want to talk about his preparation now, what your plans are for the year ahead, Laura. But when you have a horse that is such a superstar like this, no doubt, and you probably kept these moments privately, but there have been people that come to you and said, look, I have an open check for him.
No, actually. In 2014, I was with Debbie McDonald and Adrian Lyle on Wizard, and Catherine Bateson had a mare, and we were we had done this little tour from Florida to CDI in Kentucky, and then we were training out of Kim Herslow's farm in New Jersey, getting ready for the Festival of Champions that year. And it was just a few days before we were ready to pack up and go. And, of course, this horse was just rapidly improving right before, I mean, day to day from the start of the session to the end, it was like you could see these light bulbs going off. And, you know, Debbie said to me a few days before we moved into Gladstone, she said, I just want to prepare you that when we get there, people will probably be asking me if he's for sale and what the price. And I said, just stop. I said, you and I both know this horse will never be for sale. And she said, I know, that's what I thought. I just wanted to double check with you. And so I said, and if anybody does ask you, I don't ever want to know a price. And so I think she's kind of, she fielded that first wave of potential sale offers and obviously very quickly shut them down. And I think people are just so clear with our relationship that it would be foolish to offer me a price because I would just never even look at the zeros.
It doesn't mean anything to you now. Now, I'm sure once you, now you've got to this point in his career, right?
Yeah, I mean, even before this, you know, when you grow up with a horse like this, whether or not he had been this successful, you know, there are life lessons that happen outside of the arena. And this horse has taught me a tremendous amount of patience and developed me as a person, and of course as a trainer, but really as a person. And, you know, a horse with a personality like this, who's loyal and sensitive and extremely kind, he would be devastated if I turned him over to someone else. And and even if he hadn't been so successful in his career, I would be missing something in my heart if I sold him. And you can't stuff enough dollar bills into that hole to ever feel the same.
Now, I think as horse people listening to this, they can all identify with that message for sure. It is a relationship. It's very hard to ever say goodbye. You feel you're letting them down if you have to do that. Now,
yeah, you can't explain it to them. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I wonder if you'd have written him a Christmas card this year, Laura, what you would have put on it after he won that award.
Well, he probably would have eaten it before he read it. because he doesn't even look twice. He just eats what you put in front of him. I don't know. I mean, I like to think that he doesn't know one day to the next that he's done anything different or remarkable. Whether we've gone for a hack or he's just, you know, won the Grand Prix special at Aachen. This horse gets treated every day as if he won Horse of the Year. And so I think in some ways maybe it's gone to his head. If I had given him a Christmas card, he would have said, oh, right lady, where's my bag of carrots? You know, because he just, he has that confidence now, and he's earned it. So, yeah, he gets treated like Horse of the Year every day of his life.
Royalty, really.
Yeah, and he is. I mean, not just in my barn, but I think in this country, in our sport right now, yeah, he's done a remarkable thing.
Well, I wonder what His Royal Highness has lined up this year. What do you have plans for him? What's his schedule?
Okay, so we would like to try to qualify for the World Cup. That will be our first priority. And a couple maybe small changes to our freestyle going into this year. And so if we could qualify for Paris and see who else ends up there. And then we have just had released the selection procedures for the World Games. And so we'll talk about maybe a quick trip over to Europe to go head-to-head with those people who don't make it to World Cup. And hopefully lining ourselves up for what could hopefully be a team medal finish, like in Rio. And if it's in the cards and we're in top form, potentially an individual medal. That's obviously what we're looking forward to.
Well, big plans, a big year ahead, Laura, and we want to wish you the very best of luck, of course, and congratulations again for having Vedadis named as the 2017 Adequan USDF Grand Prix Horse of the Year. Enjoy it all, and best wishes to His Royal Highness.
Thank you. I'm sure he'll appreciate that.
And thanks for taking the time to come on the program. Always good to catch up with you, Laura. Thank you.
Yeah, always. Thanks so much.
And you'll find more information about the Adequan USDF Horse of the Year Awards and also a list of past and current recipients by visiting the website at usdf.org. And finally, in our education segment, Sandy Veneman joins us again to help us understand how horses learn and why they learn or unlearn certain behaviours. And this segment was initially recorded during an education session at the 2016 Adequan USDF Annual Convention.
Well, a horse did not evolve the same way a human did. Horses are food, if you think about that. They're not the top of the food chain, so they were eaten by things. I mean, they're just killing grass, but other things are eating them. So the horses that survived in the past and reproduced to have their genes in our horses' generations were horses that ran first and asked questions later. And so we have horses that naturally run away from things that might be scary. That is a normal horse response. And so we don't want to basically think that that's a bad thing. They're not stupid. They're not annoying. They're just doing what they're pre-programmed to do. And so we have to do things like gradually shape the fact that this is not a scary object. The worst thing you can do is your horse goes and shies and you go, okay, 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 okay. It's like, no, that's reinforcing the horse shying. But anyway, I feel sorry for horses that they exhibit behaviors that are innate and people get mad at them. Okay, so now we're going to try to do a little application. All right, so many people purchase schoolmasters assuming the horse are going to teach them how to ride, much like buying a car and turning the key. A well-trained horse then listens to the quietest of aids. A beginner tends to be too loud, and the horse quickly learns to tune the rider out. Okay, so what paradigm is this? It's extinction. Okay, so we give a cue. I do whatever I think I'm supposed to do, and that cue in going away, it must not have meant that. So basically, all the different things that the schoolmaster knows how to do slowly get extinguished. Okay? Don't reward horses that object to moving forward into contact by giving with the hands and dropping the contact when they feel sticky. These horses are not honestly accepting contact. What's happening if you release your connection when the horse starts to get sticky? From the point of view of the horse, yeah, negative reinforcement. Okay? So I get this rein pressure, I get sticky, that went away. Okay, she talks about the importance of stopping your horse when the movement is not right. Do not let the horse, the behavior continue by letting it go on. You're just saying whatever is wrong is really okay. What's that? Point of view of the horse, I'm doing this thing. I'm not doing it right, but I don't know I'm not doing it right. Well, if it's an aid, it's probably negative reinforcement. I'm not doing it right, but I made that aid go away. Okay? So actually training the horse to do it incorrectly. So if you're not getting what you need, you really need to try again, but don't keep doing the thing wrong or else you're training the horse to do it wrong. Well, the horse thinks it's doing it right because it made the aid go away. It's like that's what they wanted. Yeah? Because you escaped the aid. Okay, so the example is you have a horse performed a leg yield incorrectly and you go ahead and just let him do it, then you'll get beautifully incorrect leg yield. Be consistent in your training. You cannot demand a response one day and be lenient the next. What are they saying about contingencies here? The proper behavior could go away one day and you could be training it to be there the next. So basically we're teaching two different behaviors. Okay, and then the horse has got to figure out which one's the right contingency. We do this all the time with the trainer and the students. So if you train a horse, the horse is working nice, the student takes the horse back, and the student kind of trains different contingencies from our point of view that kind of untrain the horse. So hopefully they come and work with you a lot so that doesn't happen, but it's job security. The horses also learn how to do a thing called differentiate. It's like, I'll do this with Sandy, but I'm going to do this with my owner. And they're very smart. They can do that. Okay. Anyone who punishes a horse for being a horse, i.e. responding instinctively like they were born to do, doesn't have the first clue about equine psychology. Second statement, horses do not respond to punishment. They don't understand anything that happens later than the instant they act and will become fearful of emotionally based actions of a predator. So what two things is this person saying? Number one, think like a horse. What about the second one? Horses do not respond to punishment. Of course they do. So the correct thing is yes. Biologically, horses are food, and when they're afraid, they're going to run. So it's not fair to punish a horse for fearfulness. It's true fearfulness. And punishment does need to be immediate and severe. However, completely inaccurate about punishment. Horses respond to punishment very well. How do horses train one another? Punishment. Yeah, you get near my food, I'm going to kick you. You get near my food, I'm going to bite you. So horses understand punishment innately. They understand punishment quite well. Okay. Nagging can happen on the lunge. It always bugs me when people just don't be quiet while lunging. What is she saying? Extinction. And here's from the horse's point of view. Wow, I thought trot means that to be gait. I think I am trotting. She's still saying trot. I guess it doesn't really mean that. Okay. If your horse moves when you're trying to mount him, he's probably just anticipating. He's saying, let's shortcut this process. From the horse's point of view, what do we have going here? That could be escape. I'm bored. I move. I'm not bored. Or, oh God, she's getting on my back. I move. Ooh, no, she's not getting on my back. So I had a student that her horse wouldn't let her get on. And so we worked with the horse to shape the behavior. Again, we put the horse in the corner, so the behavior we wanted to see would most likely happen. It usually backed up, and he couldn't back up anymore, and I was in front of him. But then I helped her ride a little better so that it wasn't so much of an escape paradigm. Love all over them when they let you get on. So anyway, later on in here, he talks about the horse bucks. You get off, and you make that horse move its feet. Okay, from the horse's point of view, what did the horse just escape? Being ridden. That's a bad idea. Bad idea. Okay. And always the first thing I do when I get a horse that's doing something really funky, I get the vet out and make sure that it is actually not a physical problem. And if it's not a physical problem, then I try and see whether it's a learned behavior, which is why if a horse has a physical problem, like they need their teeth floated, I get people that don't float their horse's teeth, and they start having, you know, problems with the bit because their teeth hurt. You know, get the vet out. Get the teeth floated, it'll go away. Because you don't want it to last long enough that it just becomes a learned behavior that I mess around with my face or I buck. Definitely, you have to become the leader in the relationship. But there's I don't have anything wrong with the cookies and stuff too. But again, it's like, what do I do if my horse is a bad horse? I'm the alpha mare. Yeah. So there's very fairly narrow parameters of what's good behavior in my reality. And horses stay in that, and they're very comfortable with that because it's consistent. They know what they need to do. They know what's going to happen. They're happy like that. Just like kids. Kids don't want to be wild animals. Kids are wild animals quite often nowadays. The parents don't parent them because they feel guilty about not being around. And then the kids aren't happy with that.
And our thanks again to Sandy Veneman for that segment. And finally, we have a reminder that awards not picked up at the 2017 Salute Gala and Annual Awards Banquet were mailed to recipients in mid-December. And if you've not received your award by January the 30th, please contact the USDF office. And finally, a reminder that Johan Hinnemann returns for the 2018 USDF FEI Level Trainers Conference, which will be held February the 6th and the 7th in the main arena of the Adequan West Coast Dressage Festival in Del Mar, California. You can find more information about how to become an auditor or apply as a demo rider by visiting the website at usdf.org, where you'll find the view attendance criteria and other information. And that's it for our first episode of 2018. Don't forget to visit the website at usdf.org and follow eTrack for more educational information and resources. And you can download this podcast, as always, from the iTunes podcast store to any podcast player app. And to find out when the latest episode will be available, do follow us on social media at USDF. Until the next time, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.